the third case for oral argument this morning is the City of Sioux Falls versus Johnson. For the appellant, City of Sioux Falls is Arshon Turner, the Chief Assistant City Attorney. And for the appellees is Mark Meyer Henry, also from Sioux Falls. Mr. Turner, you may proceed, sir.
May it please court, counsel. I am here on behalf of the City of Sioux Falls following the two reversal and remands of the City of Sioux Falls versus Johnson case, obviously a condemnation case, eminent domain case, involving the city's acquisition of 9.7 acres of property in southwest Sioux Falls. This particular appeal is limited, however, to the trial court's following the last remand of this court in August of 2001. This court specifically said and directed the trial court to conduct a meaningful review of the claim for attorney's fees, and that is the claim that in the prior action by landowner's counsel of $222,000 as a reasonable fee under SDCL 213523, and the trial court's award of $175,000 in that action. This court specifically said in paragraph 20 of its opinion that there was no logical explanation for this increased fee of $175,000 based upon a reduced verdict following the first appeal. That is, after the first appeal, the trial court's award of reasonable attorney fees under the statute was $130,000. That was based upon a $1.2 million verdict. The city, of course, had offered $550,000 as part of its final offer. On remand, when the case was tried to the second jury, the verdict was reduced by $100,000. That is, the final verdict as just compensation was $1.1 million. Based upon that reduced verdict, landowner's counsel submitted an increased fee request of $222,000, was awarded $175,000. This court said there's no logical explanation for that. And that's simply a common sense part of the city's appeal here. There is no logical explanation for an increased fee based on a reduced verdict. However, when this went back down in front of the trial court, who was a different judge than the initial trial court, the trial court abused its discretion by, first of all, applying the wrong standard. That is the standard that this court established back in the Kelly case, and that is to look at what is a reasonable fee under the statute as applied to a governmental entity. The trial court said, no, I think I can actually look at what was the contractual arrangement between landowner's counsel and his clients. And that, of course, was a contingent fee agreement. And the city would concede that those are typical and common in condemnation cases. However, this court has often held, and through the Kelly case, cited the City of Bismarck case, where it is ruled that the contingency fee agreement is only one of the eight factors that is to be considered. Of course, there are a myriad of other factors to be considered, such as the time and labor required. And of course, this court ruled in Johnson 2 that the time and labor required, of course, would be less upon retrial because all of the issues were resolved and guidance had been provided by the court. So there was no additional time and labor required. So at the city's position would be at a threshold, the $130,000 was a minimum fee, and there is no logical explanation, nor was one provided by landowner's counsel or landowner down in front of the trial court.
Straighten out for me before you go any further, because I've had difficulty trying to figure out exactly how many hours are included in the $165,000.
City's position would be, and it hasn't been...
What does the record say? The number of hours from Mr. Meyer Henry's office are included?
280 hours. And that was based upon Judge Bogue's ruling.
And you don't have a problem with 280 hours to try this case?
I have no problem with 280 hours.
And there's no appellate hours in that 280, right?
Well, that's one of the questions that we've had all along, is whether the appellate fees, which of course this court specifically rejected, that claim of $30,000 in the last appeal, But 280 hours, the city has no objection to that. In fact, the city's proof in this case was through a testimony from Mike Whalen, and I think he gave credit to Landowners Council of 280 hours. One of our the city's positions is that, of course, landowner, as this court has often held in, under this statute, bore the burden, if you will, of establishing what is a reasonable fee under the statute. City's position is not only didn't they meet the burden, they put on no proof whatsoever to establish what is a reasonable fee. The record reflects that they submitted what I would call five form affidavits from friendly attorneys. I believe only two or three of which were actually notarized affidavits. But of course, Judge Sirska rejected all of those affidavits. And in fact,
was Mr. Gregerson a friendly attorney?
Mr. Gregerson was the city's witness, Your Honor.
Is he a friendly attorney?
He was the city's witness who Mr. Meyerhander was allowed to cross-examine. And,
didn't he have prior activity in the case for the city of Sioux Falls?
The Woods Fuller firm had prior activity in the case. Mr. Gregerson did not. He had previously tried condemnation cases on behalf of the city.
And he agreed that a third contingent was reasonable.
He agreed, and it's very specific in his testimony, that he agreed, as between Landowners Council and his client, that's a reasonable fee. But he said there's a distinction, of course, under the statute. And that would be what the city's position is, that there is a distinction, that this court has said that it's not what the contingent fee agreement holds. It is the basis of what is a reasonable fee. And in fact, the Kelly case is instructive not only as to the law that it applied, but the exact same factual pattern was the underlying basis of Kelly. That is, that Landowners Council submitted essentially, here's what our contingent fee agreement is, so that's a reasonable fee. And the trial court in Kelly, I believe it was Judge Keene, said, I agree, that's a reasonable fee. This court said, no, that is not the standard to apply. That's only one of the eight factors.
Right. Not that it cannot be a contingent fee, but that it is not what the agreement is between the parties.
Right, and that only makes sense because the city obviously is not part of that agreement. The city is a party, and we've cited in our brief a number of cases to say you do get into a different realm when you're talking about a governmental entity. There was no contingent part of the fee, if you will, under the statute. If they meet the statutory guidelines for being awarded a reasonable fee, the fee is owed. And the only proof that was established below is the affidavit, and of course we objected to all the affidavits, including Landowners Council's affidavit. And of course, one of the prerequisites of that affidavit under 15654D is that it be notarized. Landowners Council's affidavit wasn't even notarized. However, if you look at the factual basis that Landowners Council submitted in this fifth separate affidavit establishing or alleging what was a reasonable fee, there was no basis upon which to come up with that fee. In essence, what he said is, here, we had a contingent fee agreement that said that landowners were to pay $223,000, I believe. Therefore, we think $175,000 is a reasonable fee. That doesn't meet their burden of proof. We put on, the city put on, deposition testimony, very specific analysis through Michael Whalen, who's done a number of condemnation cases. It says, after reviewing the entire case, including the number of hours, I believe that the $175 an hour fee that is sort of the baseline within that contingent fee contract ought to be enhanced by $100 an hour for success. So therefore, a $275 fee per hour would equal an $81,000 reasonable attorney fee.
But doesn't that argument fall to the same criticism you make of Judge Sirska's ruling, in that it focuses strictly on an hourly rate, whereas Judge Sirska looked and gave more weight to the contingent fee side? It seems to me like you're falling into the same trap that you're alleging Judge Sirska did, and that is focus on one factor to the exclusion of others.
No, I understand your question, and the city's position would be, first of all, we only had to respond to what they carried the burden on. They didn't carry their burden, but the city's response would be, if you look carefully at Michael Whalen's deposition testimony, he considered and analyzed all of the facts. that are required, the time and labor required, and under this court's opinion, that it would be less upon the retrial. The fee customarily charged in the area, Mr. Whalen testified that I think the fee works out to about $500 an hour. He testified that that would be merely whimsy and caprice for a South Dakota lawyer to, in this type of case, to receive $500 an hour.
Didn't he recognize that it's very common, that it's almost universal that people use contingency fees in condemnation cases because the city's got an opportunity to reduce that amount because they can post the money to offset it. So I mean, didn't he recognize that a contingency fee was part of it and had to be recognized?
Right, it is one of the factors. It's the eighth factor, and we have no problem if it is considered in the totality of factors that is one factor. But the city, of course, would point out that again, as to this lack of contingency between, if you're going to look specifically between landowner and the city, we of course deposited $550,000. They knew if they got over 20% complied with the statute, they were going to get returned a reasonable fee. There's nothing within 21-35-23 that says the city will pay all of the landowner's fees. It says it will pay a reasonable fee. And we've cited cases, the Manatee County case, Florida.
They're not asking for all their fees here.
Right. They arbitrarily made up in this fifth affidavit, they said $175,000 would be a reasonable fee. But of course, that's in comparison to early on when they said, and agreed to, I should say, that $130,000 was a reasonable fee as related to a $1.2 million verdict.
It looks to me like the fee request here is about equidistant between what you contend it should be and what the contingent fee contract provided for.
Yeah, and there is no provision under the statute to split the proverbial baby.
In this case, it just so happens it is about halfway in between what you think it should be and what the contingent.
Well, actually, you know, the city's position would be that the trial court itself said, I'm not going to look at what is a reasonable fee. I'm going to determine if this is exorbitant and is in line with the results obtained. Exorbitant or wholly disproportionate to the outcome. That's not the standard.
The trial court, looking at its findings here, the trial court used all the Kelly factors. The trial court touched on every cut.
The city's position would be the trial court listed the Kelly factors, but in the end said, you know, I think if the city's going to be involved in a condemnation and there's a contingent fee, you're going to be stuck with the contingent fee agreement. And of course, that's not the law.
But if that was the court's ruling, they would have stuck you with, what, $240,000 or $250,000?
No, the request was $175,000.
The contingent fee agreement was that amount.
Right, but the request for attorney's fees in front of Judge Sirska was for $175,000, and we think it shows, again, the abuse of discretion that in the end he says, you know, there wasn't a logical explanation for $175,000, but I'm going to find that $174,900 is a reasonable fee.
At one point in the city's brief, it argues that the attorney's fee should not exceed the amount awarded at the first trial because it wasn't appealed as part of the first appeal. Is the city now abandoning that position?
Absolutely not. The city's position would be that under the doctrine of quasi-estoppel, that at best, that doctrine of quasi-estoppel, that the trial court and landowner's counsel cannot come back and hold a contrary position to the detriment of the other party, that is the city. I can't say on one hand $130,000 is a reasonable fee, but now because we had to go through a second trial, and of course Judge Bowe touched on that in the underlying record, that because of the first reversal due to trial court errors and errors by landowner's counsel, that the city should not be punished with paying for either delay damages, which is one of their arguments, there is no provision for that, or to pay for two trials. There was one trial here. And that, again, at best, $130,000 would be the top end, if you will, of what is a fair and reasonable fee. But again, we've submitted two witnesses that have said, no, that's not a reasonable fee under this statute.
Well, if you're saying Mr. Meyer Henry is locked in at $130,000 because he didn't appeal after the first trial and the attorney's fees aren't, isn't the city locked in too because you didn't appeal it either?
No, the city actually received in that first appeal a reversal and remand of the entire trial. The trial to be looked at is the second trial. And if the claim, I understand your point, if the claim was for the second trial, we expended more hours and it took more time, you know, maybe that would be a logical argument. But I don't think that hasn't been the argument or the position all along. In addition, the city points out that directly contrary to this court's ruling in Johnson 2, the trial court abuses discretion in misapplying the prejudgment interest, I won't say rate because he applied 4.5%, but the way in which it's calculated. And I only need to point to paragraph 26 of the court's opinion.
Before you get to that, I had a question on the attorney's fees. Which of Judge Sirska's findings of fact did you find, if any, to be clearly erroneous on the attorney's fees?
All of those findings that indicated that $174,900 was a reasonable fee, because it's our position that, and we did object in the underlying proposed findings and conclusions, we objected to all of those because there was no proof submitted by Landowner's Council in regard to those fees. And of course, one of our arguments as well is that that no taxes should be allowed or applied against the city as a political subdivision of the state. As Justice Zinner alluded to earlier, the request is $165,000 plus sales tax, which is $9,900. And there's, again, no basis for that. The city's objection as to the prejudgment interest, again, if you look at paragraph 26 of your opinion, it's the same argument. The underlying argument is the same by Landowner's Council that they made to Judge Sirska. And the error first occurred at the October 10th, 2001 hearing, where Judge Sirska, when we pointed out this language that, and it really revolves around partial satisfaction of judgment that the city filed on May 12th, 2000, it's appendix F in the brief, that at that time the city entered into an agreement, a partial satisfaction that the landowner signed off on, that the city paid up the principal of $1.1 million. We paid it, period.
That's not a stipulation, though, that they paid up the interest on the principal.
The stipulation is that we paid, that the city paid the principal amount. And what Judge Sirska said at the urging of Landowner's Council, again, the same argument that was rejected, and therefore under the law of the case, is resolved by this court. Landowner's Council said, but you can only apply that payment, even though it's said to principal, you can only apply that partially to principal, partially to interest. And of course, what that does is it leaves a principal amount of that $1.1 million hanging out there, accruing interest. And the city's position is that under the partial satisfaction of judgment, and also more importantly, under this court's opinion, under the law of the case, that's an issue that couldn't have been explored again. For every branch of the case, that issue was resolved.
Do you agree with this? The end of the statute of, the end of the statute 31-19-33 says, but interest may not be allowed on money which has been paid into the court. And I think implied in there is that it means from the date the money is paid into court. But aren't you obligated for prejudgment interest from the date of the taking to the date of the first posting, and then from the date of the first posting to the second posting, and then from the second posting to the payoff of the judgment?
To the payoff of the principal amount. I would agree with that completely.
I'm saying if the principal is paid, though, you still can calculate what interest was obligated on that.
Right, I agree with you up until the point of the, and the city's position is, of course, we owe prejudgment interest. I think at pages 905 and 906 of the settled record, we've indicated what the interest will be. I believe it's approximately $8,000 to $10,000 different than what Landowner's Council is talking about. But the city's position is clearly at the time that we satisfied the verdict, the principal amount, we owed no more prejudgment interest on that principal amount. City's position is they're not entitled to prejudgment interest on attorney's fees. And so therefore, but they would be entitled to post-judgment interest. And we've calculated that in. After May 12th of 2000, they're entitled to post-judgment interest. One of the other issues that the city has brought up, and I don't want to wait here before our time runs out, is that under 15 SCCL 15-26A-38, city's position would also be that given the uniqueness of this appeal and the statutory stay that is allowed under that statute, that the city not be penalized for the accrual of time that it took to appeal these two matters, and there would therefore be an alternate lower prejudgment interest amount that would exclude that time period. Otherwise, we would ask the court for a reversal of the trial court's decisions, and specifically, now that the evidence has been established, it's been appealed before, that this court determined that $81,620 is a reasonable fee under the statute. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Turnoff. Mr. Meyerhander, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, Mr. Turnoff. What I think we are doing here today is to use a test to determine whether this case, whether Judge Surska's determination should be reversed. And the test is whether a judicial mind in view of the law and circumstances could reasonably have reached the conclusions that Judge Surska did. And before I begin, I would point out that none of the findings of fact have any statement that a fair and reasonable fee is $165,000 plus gross receipts tax. That's only found in conclusion of law number 8. I'm not aware in the appeal anywhere where the city of Sioux Falls attacks any of the findings of facts as being clearly erroneous or without evidence, nor frankly any of the conclusions of law. What this case is about is a statute passed by the legislature, and it's in the appendix of my brief. And that's what we're here arguing about. We're not arguing about anything other than that the legislature, which is unusual, and the title of the bill says, condemnors, which I think we agree is the city of Sioux Falls, required to pay defendants, court, and attorney expenses in certain eminent domain proceedings. So the legislature has said to the city of Sioux Falls, if you can't estimate within 20% of the fair market value of this land, then you're going to have to pay to the landowner reasonable attorney's fees. Now, in this case, there's absolutely no evidence that the standard of one-third of the LIF is not a reasonable attorney fee. Even their witnesses agree to that. And let's be clear what we're talking about. Lawyers in this state, like myself, who mainly earn my living on contingent fees, say to a citizen, bring me your condemnation case. What has the government offered you? And you find out what that is. And that's a number. And if that's a reasonable number, a person like me will say, I don't think I can do you any good. Take the offer. Or you say, well, let's look at this. Will you authorize hiring an appraiser for a couple $1,000s? Looks low to me. And we go out and we hire an appraiser. And then we decide if we got a case or we get a thumbnail sketch. The point being this, that the citizens of our state, and the legislature knew this when they passed this bill. Remember who was in the legislature when they passed this bill. A goodly number of lawyers. Joe Burnett was the majority of them. They knew how this worked. And the LIF is saying if the government, like in this case, said to Mr. and Mrs. Johnson, your land's worth $423,000. We've had an appraisal, it's worth $423,000. People like me say, well, I'll take your case. You don't have to pay me any fees, but I get a third over $423,000. And then we go out and put a case together. In this case, before trial, the city had increased its offer to $552,000. And that was the day before the trial, and we've been through that. They never got 10 days to decide, but day before the trial. Now, for your purposes, that's the benchmark. But as with the client, it's a different benchmark, two different lifts. So here, that was some $552,000. We tried the case. My clients got $1,000,002. It was appealed, it was reversed. We tried the case again, they got $1,000,001. In this, there's been three appeals. Now, the legislature says a reasonable attorney's fee. And I'm not here arguing, although it's clear that I know of no lawyer, nor do I think they could find one, that takes for landowners, for citizens that the legislature wrote the act for, that take it on an hourly basis. Because the idea is you don't want the citizen to come out behind. I mean, they come in, they say it's $423,000, we charge them $200 an hour to go try it or whatever, and they come out behind. And so, yes, sometimes when the city's very wrong, like here, 100% off on the value of the land. On a contingent basis, the fee becomes big. But as I reminded this court, I've tried the same type of case and come up here and settled many legal issues, including valuable legal issues in the city of Sioux Falls. Landowner got nothing. It wasn't more than 20%. So, number one, the reasonable fee has been declared even by Dick Gregerson, who I respect greatly and is an eminent lawyer, represented the city, so forth. That's the standard. It's reasonable. There, but we're not asking for that. We're not asking for that because of this idea in the courts that even though the legislature set a reasonable fee, I agree with what this court said in Kelly, that we should look at all these factors. And I believe Judge Surska did. He made findings on each of them. He found that maybe I know what I'm doing as their lawyer. I think he gave us a little credit for that. I pointed out that Woods Fuller had a couple of excellent lawyers on the second trial, but they hadn't been through all this. They had to look up cases. By the way, it's 380 hours is what the judge found as a finding of fact that I billed for. Now, I didn't take Johnson 2 to say that a landowner can't get credit for the time that his counsel spends an appeal. What I took this court to say is there's no separate appellate, that the trial judge will determine that. That doesn't make any difference because in caution, everybody eliminated that. We weren't sure what your decision was. We eliminated all that, even though in South Dakota, we all know everybody has a right to appeal, and I don't think this court expects landowners' lawyers to do a lousy job in front of you. So I think what you were saying, and the way I read it is, no, Mr. Meyer-Henry, you don't get a separate billing of appellate attorney's fees that we, the justices, have to determine and then make it part of the disbursements. No, I took it to mean you're wrong on that, Meyer-Henry. That's all going to be taken care of by a reasonable fee for the work down below. So in this case, I simply go by your rules. It is the city's job to show where any finding of fact is clearly erroneous. I didn't see it in the brief. I didn't hear it in the argument. It is up to them to show where de novo any finding of the law is clearly erroneous. I didn't find any argument there other than it's too much. Same thing Judge Surska heard. We can maybe both be blamed, but I kind of like my sentence. You know, I've never seen it violate the test of no judicial mind could find a number midway between what one party says and the other party says. And that's where it came out to. And I think it's fair because the purpose of this money is to give it to the landowner to defray their expenses when the government takes their land, which they had no choice in, and doesn't offer them a fair amount and causes them to hire people like me to do what we do. That's the purpose of the bill. Here, and nowhere in that bill, do you find give a break for someone like the city of Sioux Falls, who, if they were so worried about this, could have paid the first judgment and been far ahead. They chose to go on. That's their right. You know, as a taxpayer, I want them to be aggressive in protecting the public purse.
But how did we get from $130,000 in the first case to $175,000 in the second case on a lesser verdict?
Well, a couple reasons. Number one, we had an appeal. We had a lot of legal work, number one. Number two, let's be honest about it. Supreme Court, this court, wiped out everything from the first case. You wiped it out. Okay? And I kind of like the Chief Justice's question of how we work with the city. The landowner's bound by $130,000, but evidently the city's never bound by anything.
So that's your floor if it's their ceiling.
Well, in a way. But now, think what we're talking about here. Unless this court wants to do what the rules of appellate procedure say you're not supposed to do, subject your own judgment of what a fair fee is, you've got to go back to the legal test of an appeal. I haven't heard or seen anything in this appeal that says $165,000 plus gross receipts tax is not a reasonable fee. The lower circuit court judge found that it was. He had three hearings. He heard the evidence on it. And now under the appellate rules, they have to show that no judicial mind could have reached that number. That's the legal test. And so what I'm saying to you, Everyone agrees in this case, except maybe Mr. Torn. Everybody agrees that it is ethical, reasonable fee to charge a third of the lift. And if it's a little case, people like me know, yeah, you need to get a 50% lift, but the fee's $3,000. We take those cases. That's part of our duty because we do these things. This case is big because the city, after having the jury tell them it's worth $1.2 million, what did they do? Did they adjust their offer? Not one penny. Not one penny. They knew the Kelly test, and part of it is the size of the case. Now, they say that $500 an hour for attorney's fees is outlandish. That's not true. There are lawyers in this state charging $450. So as a hourly calculation, I could give you a speech about how you cannot compare these type of situations solely to an hourly rate. Any good plaintiff's lawyer in South Dakota has to make money on the winnings of at least $500 an hour to support the losers, because you see us up here as plaintiff's lawyers with lots of losers. And that's just the economics of it. So when the legislature said, pay a reasonable fee, a circuit judge says, I've had three hearings the way I'm supposed to, I've listened to it all, and I find it's $165,000, then the burden is on the government to tell you that no judicial mind could reasonably find that amount.
And what language in the statute also indicates the legislature intended that the city of Sioux Falls should pay taxes on the fee?
Well, I think that's part of the fee. It doesn't, Justice Zinner. It doesn't. But of course, we're unique in South Dakota because we have a gross receipts tax. And so everything that we get, there's gross receipts tax. I mean, in a way, what we're down to is the amount that pays your salary, because of that gross receipt, 2% is going to go back to the city. So I don't even think we should worry about that 2%, because it's going to go back. But that's the fee. I mean, that's how everybody charges fees in South Dakota, unless your client is tax exempt. Woods Fuller's bill to the city did not include the gross receipts tax because the city of Sioux Falls is an exempt client. And so really the fees here, Justice, are $174,900. It's just that the law allows us to put it on extra, and we do, so our clients know that's the way it works.
But do you agree that the gross receipts tax is imposed on you, the attorney, for your services, not upon the client? And in the absence of a fee agreement, which requires the client to pay taxes, the client would not have to pay taxes on an attorney fee that you collected.
That's absolutely correct. That's why every attorney fee says the fee of X plus the applicable sales tax. So you're exactly right. I agree totally. But if you look at the Johnson fee agreement, as with everyone I write, it says the fee is calculated in such a way, plus the applicable sales tax. And I've seen many other lawyers, and we all do it the same way. I want to move now to our issue that we raised on appeal. In Johnson 2, this court, on a new issue, found that the Johnson property was taken for streets. We argued, not to go over it, but some of you are new, that Johnson 2, the court had to determine, Judge Bolt at that time, determined since the petition was for taking the property for wastewater and drainage and streets, he found the higher number of 10% prejudgment interest because all other condemnation cases are 10% prejudgment, except there's a special statute for streets and highways that was passed at 4.5%. And this court held that Judge Bogue should have used the hierarchy of the street highway 4.5%. I am raised, and you did not decide any issues about separation of power, nor did you decide the constitutional issue of whether 4.5% is a fair market rate of delay damages. You haven't decided that.
Shouldn't there be an allocation at the trial court level of what percent was highway, what percent was wastewater?
Well, it wasn't done. What was done is the decision was made. We're back on this disbursements fight. I, on behalf of my clients, called a banker in Yankton. And at that time, I'm going to answer your question, Justice Sabers. At that time, said the fair market value for real estate transactions, which is what this is, was 10%. Now, it doesn't make any difference whether it's a street, because you still have to get under the United States Supreme Court cases and the Constitution. You still have to get the fair market value of interest. So it doesn't make any difference. You shouldn't get more, you shouldn't get less. It's a land transaction. But the only evidence in this record down below is an offer of proof that I made that the fair rate is 10% on real estate transactions, what happens to be our normal prejudgment interest rate.
Can't the legislature make a reasonable determination as to the purpose for which eminent domain is taken? Can't they say that the streets, you know, are basically for everybody, including people outside the county and outside the state, and therefore they should only pay 4.5% interest?
No, they can't. Well, because the United States Supreme Court says they can't, and our Constitution says that you have to make just compensation. Every state that's reached this issue, every other state that's reached this issue, has said, we call it prejudgment interest as a substitute for what the U.S. Supreme Court calls delay damages. It's that time period from the land being taken until the verdict. Those are delay damages. Now, I urge you to follow and read the North Carolina case, which adopted the New York theory, because they were right where you're at today. And here's what they said, because I'm not urging you to overrule or hold on constitutional our statute. I don't want to do that. I would prefer what North Carolina has done, California has done, and the other states. The legislature set a base of 4.5%. That's what I'd urge you to look at our statute. Can't be less than that. But the Constitution, both our state constitution and our federal constitution, require that it be fair market value. The same test this court has stated is how you value the land, the fair market value. And we have the only evidence in this record, and it's 10%. It's the same as if this were all wastewater, it should have been 10%. I mean, we have a screwy deal, and I can tell you the history of the statute, but it's not important. What is important is the city has never, in either this case or the last one, ever answered the argument that the delay damages have to be constitutionally supported, which is fair market value. So no, our legislature can put 4.5%, but this statute should be read as the floor, because my client has constitutional protections, both state and federal. And once the once this court decided to use the streets 4.5%, then an issue popped up, and that's the one I've raised on this appeal. Because I think if you read my cases, and there's none of theirs really to read because they don't answer it, the city doesn't answer it, is that the United States Supreme Court, North Carolina is the perfect one, because they had an 8% statute. They said it's 11 because that was the fair market value. What I'm raising to you is that our legislature takes a little different view than some of our judges do about this statute. This statute says, and the legislature said, we want landowners whose land is taken away to be fairly compensated. And you don't get any eminent domain appeals up here, because most of the time, there's a fair offer, never goes to court. But when they're totally wrong, the legislature wanted the landowner to be made whole. They never said anything in the statute about cheap rate interest. I mean, they did that for the Department of Transportation. If you go back in history, that was the Department of Transportation bill, because the other ones have to pay it. Through other statutes, the city of Sioux Falls claims that protection, but they still have to meet the Constitution. And the Constitution does not allow an interest rate of 4.5% to be set by statute when the only evidence in the record is that the interest rate was 10%, and even more clearly, on all other eminent domain cases, it's 10%. So I urge you
to remand on that issue. I don't think that they've carried their burden of showing that a judicial mind could not have found the attorney's fees involved. There's a lot of nitpicking. We could go back and forth. I just have a little time. I'm the one that had my client sign something called a partial satisfaction of judgment. And I hope my colleague is not here saying he tricked me or outsmarted me. It said this constitutes payment in full of the principal $1,100,000 just compensation jury verdict for the property obtained by the city. The partial satisfaction judgment shows no way to be construed as a waiver or a relinquishment of any party's right to appeal. I hope he's not arguing to you that when he comes in, he didn't. Marie McKittrick comes in with a check for $552,000 and says partial satisfaction, that somehow my clients waived the interest that has been calculated like Judge Cirska did since this state started having decisions. I mean, that's just without merit.
Thank you.
One question. From your review of the record, what is your estimate of the amount of these 9.7 acres that were taken was for highway purposes?
Oh, 2%? Well, used for highway purposes, the only purpose, if you've been by there, and maybe Mr. Tornup will answer better, but it was maybe 15 or 20 feet on the north edge where 57th Street goes. I mean, the main purpose...
For the whole length?
Yeah, for the whole length. So, right. I mean...
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Turner, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Excuse me, one question. Is there any notice of review filed on the finding by the trial court judge that it was in part for highway purposes or in part for wastewater?
No, Justice, just on the general issue of 10% versus
1%. Thank you.
Thank you. I know Landowners Council has talked about, has the city established that there was actually an abuse of discretion. Under this court's rulings, an abuse of discretion has occurred. The court has ruled that it has occurred if an injustice has been done by the trial court's rulings. And that, of course, is what the city is arguing, that an injustice has been done, in part because of the what you last said there was no logical explanation for, but in part because they failed to meet their burden of proof. Mr. Meyer-Henry talks about that, gee, there are lots of lawyers that do make $500 an hour. You know, that would all be good information if it was presented to the trial court as part of their burden of proof. But again, all affidavits that he submitted from fellow attorneys, those were stricken. Arguably, Mr. Meyer-Henry's affidavit was stricken. The judge's ruling wasn't perfectly clear. We did object to the fact that it wasn't notarized. It clearly doesn't comply with the statute. That is 15654D. But also, in a condemnation case where similar issues have been discussed about an abuse of discretion, and this is at pages 21 and 22 of the city's brief, says such an abuse occurs when the result is so palpably and grossly violative of fact and logic that it evidences not the exercise of will, but perversity of will, not the exercise of judgment, but defiance thereof. Not the exercise of reason, but rather of passion or bias. And the city's position is that given that all of the factors were not appropriately considered, there was no evidence submitted by Landowners Council, that is the only conclusion that the court can come to in this case. That, and again, you last said there wasn't a logical basis for it. All the city would ask for is a reasoned basis. The city submits that in the findings, again, there was some discussion about some of the factors, but not all of the factors. There was no discussion about the evidence submitted by the city, including Mr. Whalen's testimony and also Dick Gregerson's confirmation that $81,620 would be a fair fee. There was also in the findings, it was noted from Mr. Meyer-Henry that the trial court ruled that 380 hours was appropriate in this case. That's one of the problems. The trial court never even addressed that issue. It's not in the findings. As to the question about where did the city specifically object, in the sub-record, it's at pages 907 to 915 The city objected to the lack of findings, if you will, the lack of support or reasoned basis for those attorney's fees. So again, you know, I could stand up here and say, I know attorneys in Minneapolis that charge $600 an hour. Well, that doesn't mean anything. It's not part of the record. There's no support for it, and this isn't the time for that. So
I know Mr. Meyer Henry has the burden, but is there evidence in the record from Mr. Gregerson or Mr. Whalen that $165 is an unreasonable fee?
There is evidence in the record. I asked Mr. Whalen if, again, because he talked about the threshold or the jumping off point is to look at it initially at the hourly basis. Again, that's not the only basis he looked at, but that's the jumping off point. And I said, therefore, would you consider $433 an hour? That is in Mr. Meyer Henry's unnotarized affidavit, that that's a reasonable fee. Is that reasonable in the state of South Dakota? And he said, absolutely not. In fact, he would view that as mere whimsy and caprice. As to the issue about this notice of review issue, the city would submit, first of all, that Mr. Meyer Henry, on behalf of the landowners, has failed to preserve that issue. And that's one of the things he alludes to. The city hasn't addressed it. We don't address it because, in part, it's governed by the law of the case, paragraph 26 of the Supreme Court's last opinion. But also, given the fact that Mr. Meyer Henry hasn't even preserved that issue on behalf of his client because he did submit an offer of proof that was rejected. But within his proposed findings or any objections thereto of the trial court that established that rate at 4.5%, the prejudgment interest rate, there was no objection from landowners' counsel. None. Therefore, under this court's prior rulings, you've ruled that issue is not preserved and it's not appropriate. This is the first time the city has heard that landowners are not challenging the constitutionality of 31-19-33 because, of course, that is what they're doing. And that's why they provided notice to the Attorney General on remand that they were going to challenge the constitutionality of that statute. I think that's even reflected in their brief at page 18 of their brief, that they say the statute that applies the 4.5% prejudgment interest rate is unconstitutional. Even if you got to the merits, of course, as this court has long held, anyone challenging the constitutionality of a statute bears the burden of proof. In fact, they have to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. There was no evidence submitted but for this offer of proof by a local banker. No qualifications were provided for the banker to establish what is a reasonable interest rate under South Dakota's condemnation statutes. So they're woefully short in establishing that case, and to ask this court then on appeal to consider or look at what would be an appropriate compensation for delay damages. And of course, I'd point out as to this delay damage issue, they've cited no authority in their brief about that. They've cited cases, again, the state of Washington case, about how a market rate should be more applicable in condemnations. But of course, that's the same argument that this court rejected specifically in its opinion in Johnson too. So we think, given the totality of the errors here committed by the trial court in one, basing the award for attorney's fees solely on the contingent fee agreement, again, when the court said, but I think if there's a contingent fee involved, the city is stuck with that contingent fee agreement. And given that more specifically, that the trial court locked into this argument, ignoring the partial satisfaction judgment, ignoring this court's opinion that says that issue has been waived, therefore it's moot, and saying, no, I think prejudgment interest the city's payment of the principal amount of $1.1 million ought to go partially to interest and partially to principal, I think those issues are all erroneous, and we've argued that all along. And given that the fact, as to those attorney fees claimed by Mr. Meyer Henry on behalf of his client, that they're unsupported, we think the court has enough evidence in front of it to say, you know, that's not a reasonable basis. Again, under the doctrine of quasi-estoppel, that they're not allowed to bounce the fee back and forth, and specifically up to $175,000 as a reasonable fee under 213523. I would point out that also that Justice Sinner, you asked about, you know, how many hours were expended and where does it talk about payment of taxes? Where did they come up with this number? And Mr. Meyerhenry said right here in front of the court that, of course, the appeal has to be factored into this, into his attorney fee calculation. This court, I don't think, could have been any more clear than in paragraph, I think it's 27 of your opinion, where they asked for $30,000 in appellate attorney's fees, and this court said it's not allowed for under the statute. And I think it's probably somewhat coincidental or telling that from that $130,000 basis, their last request for appellate attorney's fees was approximately $32,000, and that now the fifth and final request for a reasonable fee is $165,000. You do the math, and it seems like they've, in essence, added those numbers in.
Would the burden be on you or your opponent to put in the record what percent of the property was used for highway purposes and what percent was used for wastewater?
If the argument is going to be as to what is an appropriate prejudgment interest rate, is that why you asked the question?
Yes.
I think the burden would be on them if they're challenging the statute. Within the petition itself, of course, the city says it's both, this project was both for street purposes and drainage rate purposes. And that's really our burden. And we think we've met that. And again, we would ask the court to reverse.
You think that just because a part of it relates to street purposes, you can come under the prejudgment interest statute of the of highway purposes?
Certainly.
Even if 90% of it, say, relates to wastewater?
I don't think the number is that high. I know it's more than 2%, but I think under SCCL 2135, Chapter 2135, which we filed our petition, and of course which no objection was made, that yes, you then fall under those statutes, and therefore the 4.5% prejudgment interest rate applies.
Why wouldn't it make sense to remand to the trial court to make a determination as to how much of it was used for real property for highway purposes and how much was used for wastewater?
Because the city, may I finish?
Certainly.
Because the city's position would be, first of all, the issue has not been preserved, and it's not appropriately before the court. But nevertheless, that there is no provision that I'm aware of, and I've done a number of condemnation cases that would indicate that there should be some type of allocation as to percentage for street and a percentage for drainage way purposes.
Well, you have two different interest rates. I mean, what more do you need for notification of allocation?
The city's position would be that, again, because we filed the petition as we did under 2135, or as the court ultimately ruled, I'm sorry, that it was under 3119, if that becomes a moot issue.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tortorella.
Court will be in recess until 9 o'clock tomorrow.